It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 557 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a fun interview with Dalton K. Shannon and Wells Thompson from 4Color Comics. They have a Kickstarter underway for Frankenstein the Unconquered number 2, and it will conclude on October 19. The comic is described this way. Frankenstein's monster thaws from the ice 500 years in the future to find a bombed-out apocalypse as hideous and broken as he is. We discuss how the comic came to be and what else Wells and Dalton are up to. Be sure to support their Kickstarter project as soon as you finish listening to our great conversation. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
The desert is nothing but the eternal lies of its savage sands. But there are those who carry the truth with them on their warm, wretched backs. And the beast has come to share his own.
It's great to welcome to the podcast the folks from 4Color Comics. And that includes Dalton Shannon. How are you, Dalton?
Hey, I'm doing great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. And Wells Thompson. How about you, Wells?
I'm doing fantastic.
All right. What you guys are involved with is you have a book on Kickstarter right now called Frankenstein the Unconquered.
That's yes, the one.
And from what I see, you guys met your goal in 72 hours, right?
Yep, that's the claim to fame. Overwhelmingly positive response to this one. Was really, really surprised by how in force people came in to support it. So
blew me away.
Well, that's cool. Well, you had number one before, so maybe all the people from number one came back with some of their friends for number two.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We had a product to show already. People knew that the story was there and interesting and wanted to see how it continued. That's definitely a big part of it.
Now, the one thing people get mad at me about is I never say when the project's going to end soon enough for them. So the project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Wednesday, October 19, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And as we're talking, like I said, you've already met your goal and you've got over 200 backers.
Yes. So,
yes, indeed.
Congratulations on that. That's good. You guys are building up a fan base, all right.
Yes.
Yeah. No. It's really nice to see our work kind of pay off in that way. Almost every campaign, we wind up with more backers than the one before it.
Okay. Let me read on the Kickstarter page what Frankenstein the Unconquered is about. Frankenstein the Unconquered is as savage and unrelenting as a titular monster, a stomping behemoth of a book that will blow your mind and soak your short box in blood. I don't know what a short box is, but that's what somebody said. It's actually
I'm blanking on his last name, but he does the Tomb of the Black Horse, Tomb of the White Horse, Tomb of the Red Horse. Great horror writer, one of my favorite people on Twitter right now.
Ian Mondrick, I think is the name.
Mondrick, there we go, yeah.
Anyway, this is a 20-page full-color comic. Now, that each issue is 20 pages, right?
Correct.
Yes, so it's 40 pages total of these two comics. And then on top of that, we have a 4-page prose story in the back of each comic so far. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So if you want to include that in there.
Stretch goals.
Very good. Now, this is your fifth Kickstarter campaign, so yeah, you're getting good at it by now.
I certainly hope so.
That's good. It's now, getting easier a little. The wheels are greased, at least.
You're figuring it out as you go along and do stuff like that. So many people I know on their first one didn't reach their goal on their first one. So,
we were lucky enough to be able to. It was an absolute heart attack. We had no idea what we were doing.
Nail biting.
And it really was just at the, like, you know, at the buzzer within the last, you know, 3 days or so is when we finally crossed that line. And it was truly heart stopping.
do you still do the thing where you refresh the screen to see if anybody has?
Oh, my God. Constantly. It's a problem. My wife has to tell me to put the phone down all the time. Like, it's so hard not to check up on it and see, because the dopamine hit when you realize that someone backed the project is super addictive.
How about you, Dalton? Do you do the same thing?
Oh, God, no. No. I try and stay away from it as much as possible. I promote and I hype the book up, but I'll keep it up on my screen at work sometimes so I can kind of check in at, like, you know, lunchtime and then when I'm going home. But for the most part, I try not to give myself a heart attack. One of us has to be sane. If both of us were going crazy looking at Kickstarter numbers, this whole thing would fall apart. So one of us has to make sure the other one doesn't die.
Okay. Because Kickstarters, people keep telling me who are successful in Kickstarters, the thing you have to do is you have to do emails and promotion so much that you're uncomfortable doing that much.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's marketing in general. The rule is kind of like you, when you feel like people are getting sick of seeing your project and hearing your pitch, that's when people are really hearing it for the first time and becoming familiar with it, which is very daunting because you obviously your initial instinct is never to like boast or over promote or tell people over and over again the same thing. But the reality of the situation is like we're all bombarded by so many comics so much of the time that if you don't get it repeatedly, you're just not going to stick.
Right, right. That's the thing about it. Now, I've listened to some of your other interviews, and I know that, Wells, you're the comics guy, and Dalton, you're not, right?
Reverse that. That's flop.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm not a comics guy, but Dalton is very much more a comics guy than I am.
Oh, I got it backwards. Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely true in that sense.
Okay, because that makes for an interesting mix as you're doing these things, I'm sure, because... one of you understands the comic format probably a little better. I mean, you've both read comics at this point, I'm sure. So
yeah.
Oh, I have a massive to read and has been read pile of indie comics and stuff I've gotten from conventions and just you wouldn't. I mean, I'm sure you would. Any fan of comics knows that the to do list taunts you, but. Yeah, no, I've definitely, I spent a couple years as an editor of a comic review site that gave me a chance to get familiar with a lot of comic projects. I think just, like, I didn't grow up with comics in the same way that Dalton did, and I don't have the same, like, deep abiding love and slavish devotion to superhero comics that Dalton definitely does.
Yeah, it's great because one of us has like an understanding of the medium and like a love of the art form and knows what makes like cool comics and what works. And then the other one can bring in like, you know, literature and more references than comics can reasonably provide. I try and stay well-read outside of comics as well, but they ruin my attention span, so it's a little harder than it used to be. But Wells helps to be like, dude, not everything can be Kirby. We have to expand a little, get the palette spread a bit.
I've got to ask you something, Dalton, because you guys both have websites. Mm-hmm. Dalton, yours is at daltonkshannon.com.
Yes.
And there's an illustration of you wearing a spaghetti. And I was just sort of curious, how did that come to be?
Yeah, that goes back to college. And not in the toga party you would think. It's in college, I was in a film minor program, and we did a web series called High and Mighty, where it was essentially all the gods of mythology in high school together. It was Jesus's first day, and he was meeting up with like Zeus and Buddha and Shiva and all the stuff.
I played Loki in that particular.
Yeah, he Wells was Loki. That was probably our first collaboration period, was that. But I wrote the series. And
he had a cameo.
I had cameo.
Flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah, so I was.
But the entirety of the costume was just the spaghetti strainer on his head.
Yeah.
Holding hands with Xenu.
Yeah, and
I think eating paste.
The picture was just kind of there, and I just kind of retrofitted it into a quasi kind of logo for the Dalton K. Shannon brand, and now it's on the website, it's on the business cards, it's every single social media profile picture. So it has a way of sticking with people, I found.
Sticking, I like that. That's good thing too. Now, Wells, you also have a website. Your website says it's wellsthompson.com. And you have an interesting sentence at the beginning of it. It says, writing show-stopping stories with heart and sometimes tentacles.
Yeah, that's... I like people often ask me, you know, what do you write? And I don't really love being pinned down to any particular genre. Like, I love writing horror, I love writing sci-fi, I like magical realism, I like slice-of-life stuff, and just more like human drama. But oftentimes, what I say for shorthand is, I don't know, if I can put a tentacle in it, they'll probably wind up writing it.
and he does, God bless him.
It's not a hard rule, but I think that joke originally came from one of the first projects Dalton and I started working on, which we still haven't turned into a full-fledged comic, but it will eventually come. Someone asked what it was about, and I think I just very quickly said it's about grief and tentacles, which is strictly speaking true, but just a very weird way to describe the book.
So where's the tentacle in Frankenstein?
It's coming.
Oh, it's coming. Okay,
we have it's to, coming. Yeah,
okay. Now, why don't you talk about what let's see, which one of you would like to describe what this is about?
Oh, Wells has the log line down pat. I'm pretty sure he says it every night before he goes to bed.
You've been on more podcasts recently. I figured you would have it down, but
Frankenstein thaws from the ice 500 years in the future and becomes Conan the Barbarian. You don't need much more than that, but Wells definitely has it.
I do. No, so the full log line that I use is 500 years in the future, after the end of Mary Shelley's novel, Frankenstein's monster thaws from the ice to find bombed out post apocalypse. That is broken and fighting for survival and looks a lot more like he does than the time he came from. So he figures it's a place that he can finally reach that kind of peace he's always seen, since people don't really seem to be afraid of him anymore. But eventually push comes to shove and he chooses violence. Now he is kind of paying for the crimes that he committed early on after thawing from the ice. And that's led him, having learned nothing, he is now on a dire revenge quest that will lead him across continents, tearing apart Halloween monsters and whatever else gets in his way.
And tentacles.
It's very Conan the Barbarian. It's very, it's our ode to pulpy, you know, horror and action comics and old Universal horror monster movies and just... Yeah, the stuff that we like.
I'm kind of curious because in the description on the Kickstarter page, you keep referring to Frankenstein as the Beast.
Yeah, it's sort of our pet name for him. And I think the name Frankenstein does get thrown around in the world of Frankenstein the Unconquered, mm-hmm. but in that's like the sort of, you know, whispered mythologizing of him, he is the Beast. Just this inhuman force of nature that doesn't even wind up deserving a name other than sort of what something to allude to the damage that he's caused. He has a couple different names, and the Beast is definitely one of them.
Okay. Does anybody actually call him Frankenstein?
A couple people.
Yeah,
a couple people know that he's, like, know that name for him.
Yeah, most refer to the Beast. Those who are closer call him Frankenstein, and those who are closest call him Adam.
Now, see, that's something I'm curious about. Why is he called Adam?
Because of...
Shelley.
Well, so that's sort of an inference from Shelley. I don't think he's ever called Adam in the novel.
I don't know if verbatim Adam, but...
Like, he leaves Victor's apartment without being named, and no one ever really bothers to name him, but he grows a really strong connection with the character of Adam in Milton's Paradise Lost, and sees himself as that sort of primordial, like, first man figure. So it's sort of a natural outgrowth that that's what he would name himself.
I was thinking it was biblical in nature.
I mean, it is biblical in nature. Paradise Lost is the retelling of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. But so it is ultimately biblical in nature. But yes, what it originally comes from that and stems from the novel, as I think we have to, you know, at least to some extent, all of our characterization of Frank does come back to the novel. We don't want to, like, sit here and claim that this is a wholly unique character. It's clearly not. Like, we're adapting it. We're just taking him to a certain extrapolation that I think only we could really reach. Yeah.
Okay. The first issue, is first issue of chapter one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is chapter one.
So yeah, we're just calling them chapters instead of issues for sake.
It says here in the Kickstarter page, chapter one shows Frankenstein monsters return to Earth after his exile in the stars. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How he ended up in the post-apocalyptic future.
Yeah.
Well,
how did he get to the stars?
Yes and no.
Yeah. Frank is a sequel to Shelley's novel, but after he thaws from the ice, there's about 200 years where he just cuts a swath of destruction across the land, and that's when he gets exiled into space. We wanted to really start the story with a bang, so we had him murdering a star as it fell to Earth. That's a pretty big bang. But all of that preamble, the journey to the stars, does get told through flashbacks throughout the first arc. Mm-hmm. And of course the rest of the 200 years, is ripe for exploration, but it's not at the seat of what Frankenstein, the Unconquered, I think is looking to explore. It's more, not how Frank falls, but how Frank rises. And a lot of that, a lot of the big time, like Roy Thomas, Conan the Barbarian fiction that, happens in the past. I mean, some of that gets explored in the prose piece. Some of that gets explored in the flashbacks. But for the most part, we wanted to kind of keep the momentum going forward. So there is an alluded past to the book. But chapter one had to start with a big enough bang, and falling from space seemed like a pretty good way to do it.
That's certainly different, I'll tell you. That I've read before.
Yeah. It's also just, I think, part of our, both me and Dalton's sort of collective storytelling ethos. Mm-hmm. It's like, we don't have, it's not necessary to, like, start the story at the absolute beginning of all things. We want to get to where it's most kind of furtive and interesting and ripe. And sort of imply a past and imply a bigger world beyond that, and then slowly fill out those details over time. Probably at least part of that goes back to me reading obsessively the Song of Ice and Fire books, where that is a huge part of it, is like there is a whole richly detailed imagined history at any point you could have picked to start the story, but we start here for reasons that may only become apparent later.
Okay, so that's something we got to keep reading to find out more about.
Yeah, and yes. We wanted to give the audience our trust and not like assume that we have to hold their hand through the entirety of everything and just kind of let them like grow into the world the way that Frank does, really.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me, too, though, that the artist actually gives Frankenstein a very Conan-like appearance.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Mary's a gem for many reasons, but the way she draws Frank is so bold and, like, evocative and, like, heavy. I mean, when this whole thing started, I think I just wanted to do like a cosmic Frankenstein where he's zooming around space with a sword and a ray gun. But then like seeing him hold a sword and then like the long hair of the monster from Shelley's novel, I was like, well, this is just Conan with stitches. And it's just seemed to me to fit right in and kind of surprising that it hadn't been done before. So to take Frank and put him in barbarian fiction just seemed appropriate and like ripe with potential. And the way Mary draws Frank as this like imposing force of nature, that it's he's a brick wall that you can't stop it. And like I get kind of scared looking at him. Like I wouldn't want to see this guy walk out of a crater. I'm not touching that.
Yeah, I think every iteration of Frankenstein has just gotten progressively more kind of metal.
Yes. And I mean, we very well couldn't just have like Boris Karloff's Frankenstein lumber out of the comet. Like that's not near as imposing.
Yeah. And that was sort of the other thing, is we wanted to make this character distinctly ours. Mm-hmm. Because again, we're adapting him from an existing property, and there's lots of different versions of Frankenstein that people have become familiar with. We didn't want to just stick bolts in his neck and have him walk around and like with his, you know, green scar on the forehead, arms sticking out. We wanted something that at the same time as it like harkens back to that description in the book of him being not just. Like there was an intent to his build. He was to like the way he's made. He was made of beautiful parts that were very big, but when they mesh together, they just don't really work that well. So like each individual part, you could say, you know, it's a beautiful nose, it's a beautiful eyebrow, but they just don't make a pretty face. And as a result, he's just kind of terrifying to look at. We wanted to take that description and turn it into something that was uniquely ours.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story about Frankenstein that's way before your time. There was a cartoon in the 60s. It was called Roger Ramjet. And Frankenstein shows up. And he comes in and his face is all sort of, you know, disfigured, and he goes, "Argh!" And Roger's sidekick turns to him and says, "What'd he say, Roger? What'd he say?" And Roger says, I'm not sure, but I think he said, and his face looks exactly like Frankenstein. I laughed for the next 5 minutes. I didn't think I'd ever laugh at Frankenstein.
Oh, man. I thought you were going to bring up Frankenstein Jr. in The Impossibles.
Well, I like that too.
Oh, I was going to say that to this day, I think the best Frankenstein is Peter Boyle and in Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're close.
It's just interesting to me because Frankenstein is just one of those larger than life symbols that people, you were saying, and I was listening to you when you were talking to somebody else about the fact that on some levels he's like Batman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He can be all different kinds of things, just like Batman can be Adam West and he can be Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. He can be all these different. Frankenstein is the same way. He could be comical, but he could be terrifying. Mm-hmm. And it's still all Frankenstein. I kind of like that about the way that you have adapted more the frightening Frankenstein. I think that was great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we definitely wanted to evoke terror and kind of show that he is a monster. Like he's not a good person, and maybe he never will be like good, but it would be so easy to have like the revenge quest be super like vindicated, and we could root for Frank the entire time and just be in his corner. But Frank didn't get shot into space for just for being pretty. Like, there's a reason. And we really wanted to kind of show that he's got his own twisted sense of what honor means, even if he may not even know what honor is, but he's got a way about it. And nothing could stand in his way. I think in the original Ashcan, like he killed a child because he dared to draw a gun on him. We changed that, but like it's not out of the question that he would like murder a baby if he thought it would get him what he wanted. So it would be easy to do Alvin and the Chipmunks meet Frankenstein, but I think especially the Frank from Shelley's novel is such a complex figure that I think it would be a disservice to just kind of reduce him to a cartoon. I mean, that isn't to say that the cartoons aren't have merit, but because it's all still Frankenstein. But like there's something deeper here that really kind of appeals to us, and to be able to explore it while also like chopping the heads off of massive dragons, like that's just dope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. We definitely wanted to like and to kind of double back on what Dalton said, we're not even trying to paint him as like wholly evil either. He's a very mixed kind of bag. And I think a lot of what he does ultimately stems from what he believes is a legitimate hurt and a legitimate wrong that's been done to him. And at least a certain portion of this book is just exploring how like maybe things have been done to him that weren't right, but that's not an excuse. It wasn't an excuse in the book in Shelley's novel, and it's not an excuse now.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested because the artwork is pretty sharp too. It's on the pages in there. And
oh, absolutely.
I'm fascinated by a couple of questions come to mind. How old actually is Frankenstein at this point?
I think he's bordering on like
600.
So like, if we're taking out the years that he was frozen, if we're assuming that he just doesn't age during that time, I think that he's probably sitting at around 210, 220 by the time that he stabs that meteor and lands back on Earth.
Yeah.
I think it's around that point.
Yeah, I don't know exactly the time frame of Shelley's novel from his birth to the ice. But yeah, we're probably 2 to 230, I would say. Yeah.
And what year what year is this that he's in the future now? 500 years? It's 2500?
So if you were to map it out on like on our timeline, it would probably be like 2350, 2370, somewhere around there. Ultimately, we said 500 years. I think the idea was just we wanted to push it off to a point where, you know, nuclear apocalypse has happened, generations have passed since then, the world is so alien and different from ours that we don't need to concern ourselves with, like, modern politics or anything like that. Like, it is something fresh and new. Not to say that, like, those human elements don't still play into like the world of Frankenstein or anything, just like this isn't our world anymore. It's completely removed from that.
Sometimes I wish I could go someplace like that.
Yeah.
We all need a vacation every now and then.
I wouldn't maybe pick this Frank's, isn't the best though. Place yeah. to go,
but. Turn off the television sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. But now there's some really interesting stuff going to happen in chapter 2. And since it's on the website, I figure we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are two characters that let me know you. And I've listened to your conversations elsewhere and about how big fans you are of Universal monsters and things like that. Two of them are going to be showing up, and it says so on the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One is the Wolfman, and the other is the Bride. And by that, I think you mean the Bride of Frankenstein.
Correct.
Yes.
So how are they going to get involved in this story? Because that's... they're 500 years in the future. That all this interests me, how you're going to tie all this together.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's not like we're on Universal's timescale either. It's, you know, we're paying homage to that catalog. but the Larry that we meet in Frankenstein number 2 is by no means the Larry you meet in 41's Wolfman. He's very much a man who lives in the times that Frank has returned to. This is his world. He's probably the last good person in this world. But he's,
I love
Larry's great.
Larry.
Poor guy, but
he's ultimately a really good guy. That is just in kind of a harsh and cruel world and stands it in proximity to Frankenstein. And as you've seen in the first issue, people in proximity to Frankenstein don't typically have happy endings.
But then the bride is explored in our flashbacks. So we'll start in issue 2, kind of fleshing out the path that led Frank to space. And the bride is heavily involved in that story. And she's probably the only character in the book who has any idea about, the entire timeline. Cause spoilers, but she's seen it all. She's seen even more than Frank has of this world. And she's a fascinating character to get to explore. And we're devoting an entire issue to her later. It's great.
Yeah, that'll be later on down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Probably also the only character who can really claim to know who Frank is.
Yeah.
Throughout completely understands him. Yeah.
That was one of my very favorite monster movie sequences when she wakes up and he touches her arm and she looks at him and goes, ah. I thought that was I was one of the few people in the theater that laughed when I
because she does that hiss and it's like, oh, okay, you're that kind of girl, no wonder he threw the switch.
So I thought that was kind of fun. So is she going to be what's she going to be like in your book?
I think she's a very kind of savvy, individual.
That's the word, savvy.
Frank has a lot of, if we're being honest, has a lot of rage issues, could stand to calm down a little bit, and is ultimately an intelligent person. That's something we wanted to carry over from the original novel was he is sharp. He's intelligent. He's fierce in a lot of ways, not just in stature. I think in a lot of ways, the bride is the better version of him and works with him in ways that are productive. And by productive in this world, I mean conquering armies and stuff, but also brings out his better nature and shows him that that violence isn't always, the best or most appropriate course.
She's for sure the diplomat,
She has her own schemes. She has her own agenda, but it is side by side with Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also we're working on designs right now. And one of the things I had in mind for her was just I want her to be physically imposing the way that Frank is. I want her to be big. And I think that will, that Mary can bring that to life in a really interesting way.
It's going to be really something to see because she's, it's such interesting characters and such, very primal in the sense of the word. They function, we're used to niceties and everybody being very civilized and stuff like that. But on some levels, it's nice to see characters that are kind of reduced to basic humanity, I guess, on some levels, or monsters, because we always think that there are monsters inside of each of us on some levels.
Yeah.
So it's going to be curious to see how you deal with that and how he deals with that.
Right, the people Frank encounters in this
book
are super, they're not physically monsters, but we encounter our handful of humans that could give things Frank has done a run for its money. It doesn't have to just be another Wolfman.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
No, the monstrous people in this comic are humans, for sure. And Frank, chiefly among them, that's sort of his tragedy, is that he's always wanted to be sort of normal and human. And in this world, he very much is in just the worst ways sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got to ask a question. I was reading through some of the stuff, and I came across the fact that Victor is alive. in this story. How much about that do you want to talk about, or do you want to avoid that subject? What do you think about
it? Who told you that? We'll have to kill them.
Like, when did you read that? I was going to say, like, I don't know where you read that.
I know where I read
it. We've tossed... Okay, you know where you read it.
I read it, and there was when I was getting ready to do the interview, they sent me a pitch, and in the pitch somewhere it mentions that, and that's all. If you'd rather avoid that subject, that's okay.
Victor is important to the story for sure. He and obviously in any iteration of Frankenstein, Victor is going to be important. But I can tell you he won't be making a physical appearance in Frankenstein the Unconquered.
I'll
be curious to see how on what level and where he comes in. That'll be fun to see. So it's
any abusive parent is going to leave an impact on their child, and so I think Frank has a lot to kind of come to terms with Victor himself, and I mean, the bride's a part of that. Frank's a part of that. Victor's a part of it. And it comes to a head, but it's not in like a way I don't think anyone would like traditionally expect.
I'm going to be curious because in my viewing of any kind of Frankenstein or reading Frankenstein, I never saw Victor as an abusive parent. So I'm going to be curious to see how you deal with that subject. That's going to be interesting.
I have a hard time not seeing him as an abusive, like in any iteration. He's so obsessed with the idea of creation, but he has nothing for the for his son once he's actually born. He completely leaves him to the wolves, and that's true in the novel, and that's true in the movie as well.
Yeah, Frank's creation was just a check mark iteration on a list, essentially.
Yeah, it was like he really had no exit strategy. It was make monster ? Profit, like no follow up plan at all for, and you see that and you wonder like how could the monster even have a chance? Which is I think what like the monster's point as well. He believes that he's been wronged on a fundamental level, and to some extent he's right. Whether or not that justifies his behavior, well, he murders a lot of people, so it doesn't. But you know, in his, I think that's a big conflict in him is what I'm doing proportional or correct based on what's been done to me.
That's interesting because we as humans do that a lot. We get to we want to accomplish a certain thing, and once we do that, we're done with that and we move on to something else. So that's really an interesting
thing. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Which is fine as long as it's not a baby.
As long as it's not a child.
Well, Frankenstein wasn't a child, was he? When he was put together as an adult.
Well, when he was born, he had kind of the mindset of a child. He didn't know how to speak. He didn't understand the world. He really was just kind of a toddler walking out into existence.
I mean, the guy learned quickly, but especially if you look at Karloff's interpretation, Karloff is essentially a 3-year-old trying to come to terms with the fact that the entire world wants to murder him, and. I can't.
He doesn't know why, and he's scared. Yeah. Eventually, he's angry.
Yeah, and I can't blame Frank for that. Like, I have a hard time seeing Frank as anything but just like a shattered child who never had much of a chance, and so now he has a big sword, and he's going to make that chance for himself.
I find it interesting. You guys refer to him as Frank.
Yeah.
I think that like we do that for our own benefit, like we talk back and forth and refer to him as Frank, but that no one refers to him as Frank in the comic.
I think Larry might. Larry I think calls him like they get to a point where Larry's calling him Frank, but Frank does not really like that, or if he dislikes it, he doesn't really say anything, but he's just like, God damn it, this guy.
He's a stoic individual.
Yeah, but his eye does twitch every time Larry calls him Frank, I like to believe.
Now,
that's headcanon.
Do you guys know how this story is going to end eventually? Well, first off, let me ask. You've got two issues. Is there going to be like a mini series in the first arc, or how's this going to work?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the first two arcs kind of bleed into each other a little bit, mm-hmm. but the general idea is we're doing 5 or 6 issues. That's like the first arc, and then some amount of issues is the second, probably mirroring about the same 5 or 6 yeah. issues are going to be the second arc. And then we have a good idea of where we end it there, but we're not committing to like fully, you know, that's where the story ends 100%. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, there could always be more story to tell.
Yeah, I think currently we've got 13 issues planned, and of course that's malleable with the two arcs with a buffer issue in between, I think is how we have it set up now. But no, there's like, I mean, the idea of Cosmic Frankenstein is super cool. So like there's no limit to what we can do with Frankenstein, but there is a definitive like beginning, middle, end to this series of Frankenstein the Unconquered. And whether we go further with Frank after that is gonna, you know, we'll figure it out. But for just this, we'll probably rename it. Yeah,
we go further.
Frankenstein to something or other.
Frankenstein. I don't know.
Space Frankenstein or something.
Cosmic Frankenstein. I mean,
Frankenstein the Eternal or something like that.
The Unending.
That'd be fun.
Oh, The Unending. That's a good one.
Yeah. I like that. We might steal that.
Okay. That's all right. Any suggestion on here is completely stealable. So this, once again, I want to make sure I let people know, because people get mad that I don't say this often enough. The project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Wednesday, October 19th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But as we said, you've already crossed you've met your goal, so mm-hmm. you're into
we have
into other territory
and we are
into the stretch goals.
We've hit our first stretch goal, which mm-hmm. is that 4-page prose short story in the back of Frankenstein number 2. There's also one in the back of Frankenstein number 1, and you can pick up both on the Kickstarter. We have a bunch of other stretch goals. Our next one is at $7,500. We're giving out digital copies of issues 1 and 2 of the original Ashcans that we made with, like, that we sort of started this character in. So you can see kind of how far those stories have come and where we originally took them and how they differ. As well as some new merch that comes out. We have a new sticker that we're going to put up for sale once we hit the $7,500 mark.
Very cool, very cool. All kinds of good things going on. Oh, yeah. Dalton, let me wrap this up and start with you. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
I am on any social media that matters, at Dalton K. Shannon. I'm pretty easy to find. It's the big red picture with the colander on it. So it shouldn't be too difficult.
You're going to be known for that for the rest of your life.
And you know what? Part of me is I sleep pretty okay with that knowledge.
I don't know if I can wear a spaghetti in my head.
See, the problem is when, you know, I get invited to San Diego Comic-Con and they require me to come on stage with a colander on my head. That's when it's like, okay, now it's, this is bigger than I thought it would be.
Okay, Wells, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter. That's where I'm most active, at Wells Thomp, or Wells Thomp, I should say. WellsThomp. And just stop it right there. I am usually, you know, it, 5 months out of the year, I'm running a Kickstarter campaign, so you can always look for me there. I am on, I have a marketplace on our books at ko-fi.com/WellsThompson. It's just my name. And you, if I'm not running a Kickstarter, then you can buy all of our books there. And if you can't remember any of that, then remember WellsThompson.com, and that will take you to any of those other places that I mentioned.
You have a store, don't you, guys? Maybe we should mention that, too.
Yeah, the storefronts. That's what I was saying. Ko-fi.com.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was what it was.
Is the Ko-fi, K-O-F-I, although I do think it's pronounced coffee as well, but I just call it Ko-fi. But it was set up to be a storefront for creators and to allow people to donate kind of seamlessly to their favorite creators. You know, the idea is like, oh, buy them a cup of coffee. So I have that set up if you want to support us directly or buy our books outside of the context of a Kickstarter. And what else? Oh, and through our website, you can sign up for our newsletter, Comics, Cats, and Cocktails, where we talk about those three things. You get pages, you get pictures of foster kittens, and you get cocktail recipes.
No tentacles?
Depends.
No tentacles in that one, but...
Oh, hey, that depends on the project. The tentacles are going to be flying in the newsletter someday.
Okay, it's...
Someday.
It's Frankenstein the Unconquered, number one and number two, an action horror comic, and people get so mad I don't do this enough, this will take care of that. The project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Wednesday, October 19th, 9:30 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time, and you guys are well into you've overshot your goal, and that's a good place to be. Believe me, many Kickstarters would like to
be there. It's a great place to be.
So keep up the great work.
Oh, yeah. No, I... And by the way, if that's too much to remember, you can always go to the Kickstarter, and if you can't necessarily commit right now, there's a Remind Me button, and they will send you an email at the 48-hour mark before we... close out the campaign, and the 8-hour mark before we close out the campaign.
Great. Well, you guys have this all figured out, so that's great. So much success, and we want to see Frankenstein and tentacles all over the place.
Hell yeah.
So keep it up.
Absolutely.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol...
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.